The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on March 17, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming today. As I'm going to be talking today about Zen practice. And as I frequently say, Zen practice is to live as we truly are. Already we're living as we truly are. We're already living as the true self. But what we truly are is usually overlooked or ignored. We usually overlook or ignore our true self. When we first start out in Zen practice, we usually think of Zen practice as a means or a technique for gain and improvement, to gain states of mind that we think we're lacking and to gain, just become better and better. Also, when we start out in Zen practice, we usually are caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs about ourselves, others, and the nature of reality. And we're caught up in the sense that we believe reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it. And we live our lives based on this belief. This is how our true life is ignored. So our practice is to see and let go of how our true life is ignored or overlooked and to live as we truly are. To carry out this practice is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. I say this all the time. People may be getting tired of me saying this, but in this practice of here now awareness, when it becomes evident that we are caught up in our expectations and caught up in our one-sided ideas and beliefs, let go of them by resuming the practice of being aware here and now, for the sake of being aware here and now. In this practice of here and now awareness, our expectations, one-sided ideas and beliefs can be seen through, and they drop away by themselves. It becomes evident reality couldn't be as we expect it to be or imagine it to be, or it couldn't be in accordance with our ideas and beliefs. That becomes evident in this practice of direct here now awareness. Our true life, our true self, our true nature, truth, this is what is being directly experienced here and now. No matter what we say about it, it cannot be explained, described, or conceptually pinned down. It's not something that can be seen objectively. Nevertheless, it is clear and obvious. It's clear and obvious in the sense that it's being directly experienced here and now, and everything is a manifestation of it. It's not something that can be hidden. It's right here, right now. It's just we overlook it by being caught up in our expectations, ideas, and beliefs. We overlook what's right here, right now. And this is a big problem for us. We're usually very confused about what our true life is. This is because we believe so deeply that reality corresponds to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that we have about it, And and we live our lives based on our ideas and beliefs and ignore directly experienced here now reality. When it becomes evident that this is going on, we resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. As I mentioned before, in this practice of here and now awareness, our expectations, ideas, and beliefs can be seen through, let go of, and they drop away by themselves. It becomes evident reality couldn't correspond to our ideas, expectations, and beliefs. Although whatever we say about our life doesn't completely say it, still we have to say something. My teacher, Katagiri Roshi, used to emphasize this. He'd say, you have to say something. He wrote a book entitled, You Have to Say Something. Teachers have to give pointers using words and concepts to help their students in their investigation of direct here now experience. These pointers are meant as suggestions to help students in their investigation of directly experienced here now reality. The teacher does not want the students to grasp, cling to, and believe what is said. Instead, the teacher is trying to offer helpful suggestions to help the students directly realize and live their true life. In doing this, the teacher might speak in terms of conventional common sense ideas and appearances in which reality seems to be dualistically structured. Common sense idea of reality is it's a reality that consists of lots of separate individuals, things, and phenomena that exist in dualistic relationship to each other. That's a common conventional idea of what our life is. The teacher might also speak in terms of oneness or universality or wholeness or totality or emptiness or eternity or Buddha nature or truth or thusness. You might use those terms. So he doesn't want his students to grasp, cling to, or believe the one-sided ideas that he uses. He wants to help people realize wholeness and totality and universality without the students clinging to ideas of wholeness and totality and universality. He's not trying to give, you know, I want to give you these good ideas and you know, your other ideas are not so good. These ideas I'm giving you are really good. He doesn't want the students to cling to any ideas. He's trying to help his students realize their true life as it is, beyond any ideas of what it is. Someone might say, well, it's a reality of multiplicity where it seems to be lots of separate things. Or you might say it's a reality of oneness where it can be realized that all beings are living one inseparable life. So maybe we could come up with a really good idea saying it's both oneness and multiplicity. But that's still just another idea. Or we might come up with the idea, well, it's neither oneness nor multiplicity. Once again, that's another idea. The teacher doesn't want the student to cling to some idea and then think that they understand reality. This practice is not about coming up with the right idea. It's about directly realizing what our life is and what this practice is beyond any idea at all. I've been saying that the practice of living as we truly are is to be aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. At first, people might think I, separate ego, self, me, should do something in particular called being aware. They might think it's something I, separate ego, self, me, should do this particular thing called being aware. This is how people usually start out. Eventually in this practice, it can be directly realized that directly experienced awareness here and now is what we truly are. And this statement is not an idea to be grasped and to believe. This statement is a pointer to help us in our investigation of directly experienced here and now reality, and to help us directly realize what we truly are, and to help us directly realize what this practice of living as we truly are is. I'd like to read something from this book, Meditation Now or Never. This is a very helpful book written by Steve Hagen. In this practice, it can be realized that we can't locate where anything takes place. I've read this several times before. I think this is some very helpful teaching here. Steve goes on to say, smell a flower. Where does that experience take place? In the flower, in your nose, in your mind? Do such questions even make sense? And where does your mind take place? Without giving it careful consideration, we may quickly say that our experience is somehow in our heads. And yet clearly we are sensing things that seem to be, in quotes, out there somehow. So where is this happening? We can't really locate it. He says, where is this happening? He italicizes this. Where is this direct here now experience happening? This gives us a big clue about the nature of mind and experience, although it goes mostly unnoticed by nearly everyone. Even after it has been pointed out, we tend to become confused by the question, or we quickly forget about it. Gradually, as we become more experienced with meditation, we start to realize that awareness isn't just gathered around and in quotes, me here. Awareness includes everything. It's more an awareness that is, there is no, in quotes, around, and nothing in particular that is, in quotes, you. It's all here in the experience of this here now moment. It's all right here. This is a very helpful pointer that Steve is offering here. Each being is a manifestation of this awareness or awakeness. This awareness that includes everything. The technical term for this awareness or awakeness is Buddha nature. Buddha nature is the subjectless, objectless, beginningless, endless, boundless, all-inclusive awareness or awakeness itself. This is our true nature. Each being is manifesting this awareness or awakeness in its own unique way. And once again, don't believe anything I said here. Just see it as a pointer. Katagiri Roshi used to say, you are Buddha. All beings are Buddha. All beings are Buddha in the sense that all beings are manifestations of Buddha nature. each being is manifesting this Buddha nature in its own unique way. This includes all beings, animate beings, inanimate beings, living beings, dead beings, past beings, present beings, future beings, all beings. There are no beings omitted from this Buddha nature. Everything is manifestation of Buddha nature. But ultimately, practice is not a means to become an awakened person or a Buddha. Practice is to be the awareness or awakeness or Buddha that you are right now, and to respect each being as Buddha. Our true life, our true self, our true nature is the Buddha nature. And the practice is to see and let go of how our Buddha nature is ignored, and to fully live as the Buddhas that we are. And I've mentioned this many times, the Katagiri Roshi in his last lecture before he died of cancer, he said in this lecture, again and again, you are Buddha, all beings are Buddha. He really wanted to emphasize this in his last lecture. He was very weak when he gave this lecture, but when he said this, he said it in a very powerful and forceful way. Really made a big impact on us who heard him giving this lecture. But Katagiri Roshi wasn't trying to give us an idea to grasp and believe. He was trying to give us a suggestion to help us directly realize our true life as it is, beyond our idea of what it is. He wasn't trying to give us an idea to grasp. There's a story I've told several times about the Zen teacher Kyogen, and Kyogen was a 9th century Chinese Zen master. His name in Chinese isn't pronounced Kyogen. That Kyogen is how the Japanese pronounce his name. I can't pronounce his name the way it's pronounced in Chinese. It's beyond my ability to pronounce it. But anyway, Kyogen, Katagiri Roshi, when he would talk about him, referred to him as Kyogen. And Kyogen was student or disciple of the great Zen master Isan. Kyogen was very intellectual person. He tried to very carefully, intellectually figure out the teachings that were being offered to him by his teacher Isan. He took copious notes of Isan's lectures, and Kyogen read many, many Buddhist books and scriptures. He was trying very hard to intellectually figure out what this was, what this way of life was, what he truly was. He was trying very hard to intellectually figure this out. And his teacher Isan one time said to him, tell me, what is your true self before your parents were born? Tell me, what is your true self before your parents are born? So this sent Kyogen scurrying to his notes and his books, looking through all the teachings that he'd received and read about. He's trying very hard to try to juggle the ideas that he'd heard to try and figure out what his true self was. And he'd go and present some ideas that he might have figured out, and his teacher Isan would say, no, no. And he'd go back and try again, study more and more, go back, and Isan would say, no, no. And it became very discouraging to Kyogen. He was trying so hard to understand what his true self was and what this way of life was. But whatever he came up with, his teacher, Isan, would reject. So finally, Kyogen gave up. He decided, I'm not gonna try and figure it out anymore. And he burned all his books and burned his notes. And he didn't try and figure it out based on his intellectual understanding anymore. But it's not necessary to burn the notes and to burn the books and burn the scriptures. That's not necessary. There's all sorts of helpful pointers in them. You don't need to burn them. They're very valuable and very wonderful. But Kyogen at the time was convinced that they were worthless. And Kyogen decided he was going to leave Isan's monastery and live his life as a traveling monk, traveling around different monasteries and working in the monasteries. And he eventually ended up, after a number of years, working as the keeper of a gravesite of a great Chinese Zen master who'd lived several hundred years before. And Kyogen's job at the gravesite was to keep the gravesite neat and tidy and clean up the paths and, you know, keep everything nice and neat. And one day while Kyogen was sweeping the path, he swept a pebble into a bamboo tree. And at the sound of the pebble hitting the bamboo tree, just that sound of the pebble hitting the bamboo, he suddenly realized who he was. He suddenly realized what this way of life was. So after that, Kyogen felt a huge sense of gratitude to his teacher, Isan. He bowed in the direction of Isan's monastery, and he said with a great sense of gratitude, "If you had given me some idea to hold on to, I could never have had this great bliss that I'm experiencing today." And then Kyogen wrote a verse describing his life. I'll read the verse and then I'll comment on sections of the verse. "One hit, and all my preconceived ideas and beliefs were seen through. I no longer live my life based on egocentric confusion. In each moment, I practice the Buddha way, the way of awakeness. I no longer strive for particular states of mind. I no longer live a life of attachment. I am not restricted by rules of conduct. Those who have realized this call it the unsurpassable way of life." So I'll briefly comment on these this verse that Kyogen wrote. So Kyogen wrote, "One hit and all my preconceived ideas and beliefs, all my one-sided ideas and beliefs were seen through. It became directly evident that reality couldn't correspond to the one-sided ideas and beliefs that he had about it." That became directly evident to him. He just realized, his beliefs were seen through and it became clear that reality couldn't be that way next line of the verse, I no longer live my life based on egocentric confusion. Usually this is what we do. We assume we're a separate persisting ego self, and we live our life based on trying to help ourselves and to help those and what we value. You know, we think of ourselves being a separate ego self, and we try and benefit this separate ego self who we imagine ourselves to be. And but Dogen had seen through that illusion of being a separate ego self living in a divided up reality. He'd seen through that very clearly. He wasn't clinging to some idea of oneness either. He just saw his life directly as it was, and he was able to let go of this egocentric confusion that most of us live our lives with, this egocentric confusion. You go to the next verse or next line. In each moment, I practice the Buddha way, the way of awakeness. This means you wholeheartedly live the awareness or awakeness that is true life, is true self, or is true nature. He saw that was what the way of awakeness. And whenever he was, it was evident that he was aware or that he was ignoring or overlooking this awareness or awakeness, he would just resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And this comes up again and again. You know, these old habits of believing how things are very deeply rooted. And in our practice, we find ourselves getting caught up in these again and again. But when that happens, don't be discouraged. Just resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Let those ideas and beliefs you're caught up in just naturally drop away by themselves. And resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Endlessly resume that practice. You're never trying to get to some point, oh, I will never, ever again believe my one-sided ideas and beliefs. I will never do that. You'll get very discouraged if you think those beliefs and ways of life based on those beliefs, if you think they never pop up again. But whenever they did, just resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. And these old habits of belief and old habits of doing things based on our confusion just drop away by itself. And endlessly we can continually renew our life and let go of the limited views that we have about what our life is. Next part of the verse, I no longer strive for particular states of mind. Usually when you start out in Zen practice, we think, I want to strive for states of mind that I'm lacking. I'm lacking the wonderful states like enlightenment, peace, freedom, wisdom, awareness, awakeness, Buddha nature. I'm lacking these states. I need to try and strive for them. And so they usually see practice as a means to try and get something that you're lacking. But ultimately, we're not lacking anything. Our true life is an all-inclusive reality. Everything is included within this reality, which is our true life. All beings are included within it. There's nothing outside of it or lacking at all. We don't need to seek after these states. They're right here now. There's a line in called Trusting the Heart Mind by the teacher Seng San. The line says, "Don't seek after truth, only cease to cherish opinions." We don't need to seek after truth or our true life or true self or true nature. They're right here. We don't need to seek after them. We only need to cease cherishing our opinions, holding to our one-sided ideas and beliefs. The Zen teacher Dogen, a famous Zen teacher who is an important teacher in our tradition, said the reason you don't wake up is you don't relinquish your views. But this is very clear to Kyogen by this time. And that's why he wrote what he did. Then Kyogen goes on to say, "I no longer live a life of attachment." Usually before we realize what our true life is, we think, "I need to attach to the good things and push away the bad things." These are just different forms of attachment. One is trying to attach to something good, and the other is to try and attach to a state or a situation where what I dislike is absent. You know, we live our life based on attachment, constantly trying to chase after, hold on to, and what we like, what we believe. But ultimately, attachment is impossible. It's impossible to attach to something else. We're not separate ego selves who could attach to something else, and there's no separate something else that we could attach to. Ultimately, this is how it is. So it's impossible to attach. It reminds me of a story about Suzuki Roshi, who is the founder of the San Francisco Zen Center and the author of the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. This was told to me by one of his students. And she said she heard Suzuki Roshi say, "You cannot have attachments." And she thought that Suzuki Roshi had misspoken. You know, he'd used the wrong word because he was from Japan. He had used the wrong word. He meant to say, "You shouldn't have attachments," but instead he said, "You can't have attachments." So she thought he meant to say, he didn't really say what he meant to say. But eventually she realized you can't have attachments. No possibility of being able to attach to something else. Can't have attachments. She realized Suzuki Roshi said exactly what he meant to say. You can't have attachments. Kyogen had realized this and was living a life free from that. When he did find himself trying to attach or believing he could attach, just resume the practice of being aware here and now for the sake of being aware here and now. Kyogen goes on to say, "I'm not restricted by rules of conduct." A true life, our true self, what we truly are, is not something that can be restricted. Some people think that the precepts are like commandments saying, "You do not kill, do not lie, do not steal." They think it's something like that, but the precepts are actually teachings or helpful pointers to help us realize when we're ignoring what we truly are, and to help us see when we're living our life based on ignoring what we truly are. The precepts aren't meant to be a restriction. They're to help us realize what we are and live our life as we are by seeing and letting go of how we ignore what we truly are and act based on ignoring what we truly are rather than living as we truly are. And of course, the reality shows up in this dualistic way. It seems like there are all these individual things and this, that, and the next thing. And we need to function in that reality, which seems to be that way. We need to obey rules of conduct that, help promote harmonious functioning in everyday conventional life. We're not trying to get to the point where nothing restricts me. I do any darn thing I want. You can't live your life that way. We have to try and function harmoniously in reality. That seems to be a very dualistic, divided up reality where we have to consider the safety and well-being and welfare of the other individuals, things, and things in it. We can't ignore that. We can't just say, I'm going to do whatever I want, come hell or high water. That's to lead a very unwholesome life. But anyway, this was very clear to Kyogen, and he realized what he truly was couldn't be restricted. But yet, still, he lived his life in accordance with conventional, everyday, common sense experience, and without ignoring that. And Kyogen concludes with, those who have realized this call it the unsurpassable way of life. And this is an unsurpassable way of life. There's nothing beyond it. This way of life includes everything. It includes all beings. There's nothing outside of it. But Katagiri Roshi used to say to us, sometimes he would point out, when he'd be giving a lecture, he'd point out to us and say, you are great. You are great beyond comparison. What we truly are is great beyond comparison. There's nothing that it can be compared to it. It's a life that there's no boundary to it, no beginning or end. This is the life you're living. There's nothing that goes beyond this. So Kyogen said, those who have realized this call it the unsurpassable way of life. But he's not being boastful, saying, my way of life is unsurpassable. Your way of life, though, not unsurpassable at all. It's pretty low-class life. He's not comparing it to something else, because this way of life is beyond comparison to anything else. It's to live the totality that is our life, is to live the life of all beings that is our life. And in living this life of all beings that is our life, all beings can help us, and we can help all beings. And it's a life in which we can realize the peace and freedom and awakeness that is what we truly are. But don't believe anything I've said, please, okay? These are just suggestions, just pointers. I hope some of them were helpful. But if you don't think they were, it won't, it, well, my feelings would be hurt a little bit, but not But hopefully, I'll be able to bounce back. So, do you have any questions about anything I've said? Or sometimes people say about my lectures, they say that made absolutely no sense to me at all. Katagiri Roshi, sometimes they'd say that to him too. He'd be up there talking on, and people would be looking at him like, what the hell is this? But he just keep on joyfully expressing the teachings. He'd be smiling away, people. But that didn't discourage him. He just kept on speaking. Well, thank you very much for coming today. And I enjoyed talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.